Chapter 12. A Single Drop. Messenger. Wilderness of Mirrors. The men guarding the chamber housing the Void Baron's private reliquary had allowed their concentration to falter. Spear listened to them speak as he stood in the shadows beyond their line of sight, a few meters up along the vaulted corridor. News had filtered down through the crew hierarchy aboard the Ayuba, fractions of the reports from the communicatory that warned of sightings of Adeptus Astartes on the move. No one seemed to know if they were warriors still loyal to the Emperor of Mankind, or if they were those now following the banner of the Warmaster. Some even dared to suggest that all the mighty legions of the Astartes had turned their faces from their creator, embarking on a jihad to take for themselves what they had captured for Terra during the Great Crusade. Spear understood only small elements of the unfolding war going on across the galaxy, and in truth, it mattered little to him. The Killer's keyhole view of intergalactic conflict was enough. He cared little about sides or doctrines. All Spear needed was the kill. It was enough that his master Erebus had given him murders to commit, perhaps even the greatest murder in human history. But before that could happen, he had steps to take, preparations to be made. Spear allowed the demon skin to regain a small amount of control over itself, and the surface of his surrogate flesh shivered. Removing the ship suit overall he had been wearing, he stepped naked into the deep shadows. Hair-like tendrils emerged from his epidermis, sampling the air and the ambient light all around. In moments, Spear's body became wet with sticky processor fluids, changing color until it was night dark. His features retreated behind a mask of scabbing crusts, and then he leapt soundlessly to the high ceiling. Secreted oils allowed him to adhere there, and the Killer snaked slowly along his inverted pathway, passing over the heads of the guards as they fretted and spoke in low tones about threats they could not understand. At the entrance to the reliquary, there was an intelligent door, possessed of a variety of sensory and thought mechanical systems, designed to open only to Merikson Neuritas, or a member of his immediate family. It was little impediment to Spear. He slapped the demon skin lightly as it whined in his mind, dragging on him a little as it sensed the guards and expressed a desire to drink their blood. Chastened, it obediently extruded a new, thickly-lipped mouth at his palm. Spear held the mouth over the biometric breath sensor, at the same time sending new hair tendrils into the thin gaps around the edges of the door. They wormed their way into the locks and teased them open one by one. It had been easy to sample the Void Baron's breath. Simply by standing close to him, Spear's demon skin sheath had plucked the microscopic particulate matter and DNA traces of his exhalations from the air and stored them in a bladder. Now, the second mouth puffed them out over the sensor. There was a whisper of well-lubricated cogs, and the door opened. Spear slipped inside. Dagonet's sun was passing low over the top of the ridgeline, and soon night would fall. Jenica Solm stood out on the flat expanse of stone that served as a lookout post, and looked out at the ochre rocks without really seeing them. She knew that the mission clock was winding down towards zero, and at best the execution force had only hours until they entered the final phase of the operation. She could see that the others sensed it too. The Garantine had at last returned from whatever lethality he had been spreading on the Clanner forces, menacing all who saw him. Tariel, Coyne, and the Culexus waif were all making ready, and her brother. Solm knew exactly what her brother was doing.
"Hello."
The voice made her turn. With slow, careful steps, Lady Sinope emerged from the cave mouth behind her and approached.
"I was told I might find you here."
"Milady."
Jenica bowed slightly. Sinope smiled.
"Oh, you don't need to do that, child. I'm a noble woman only in name now. The others let me keep the title as a gesture of respect. But the truth is, the clans of this world have wiped away any honor we ever had.
Others must have rejected the call to join Horus's banner. The old woman nodded.
No, a few. All dead now, I think. That or terrified into compliance.
She sighed.
Perhaps he will forgive them.
Soam looked away. I do not believe he is the forgiving kind. After all, the Emperor denies all word of his divinity. Sinope nodded again.
Indeed. But then only the sincerely divine can do such a thing and be true in it. Those who think themselves gods are always madmen or fools. To be raised to such heights, one must be carried there on the shoulders of faith. One must guide and yet be guided.
I would like some guidance myself, admitted the assassin. I don't know where to turn.
No.
The noblewoman found a wind-smoothed rock and sat down on it.
If it is not too impertinent a question, may I ask you how you found your way to the light of the Lectitio Divinitatis?
Solm sighed. After my parents were killed in a conflict between rival families, I found myself isolated and alone in the care of the Imperium. I had no one to watch over me.
Only the God Emperor.
She nodded. So I came to realize. He was the single constant in my life, the only one who did not judge me or leave me. I had heard stories of the Imperial cult. It was not long before I found like-minded people. Sinope's head bobbed.
Yes, that is often the way. Like comes to like all across the galaxy. Here on Dagonet, there are those who do not yet believe as we do. Capra and most of his people, for example. But still we share the same goals. And in the end, there are still many, many of us, child. Under different names, in different ways, everywhere you find human beings. As he led us to greatness and dispelled the fog of all the false gods and mistaken religiosity, the God Emperor forged the path to the one truth. His truth.
And yet we must hide that truth.
The old woman sighed.
Aye, for the moment. Faith can be so strong at times and yet so weak in the same moment. It is a delicate flower that must be nurtured and protected, in preparation for the day when it can truly bloom.
She placed a hand on Jenica's arm.
And that day is coming.
Not soon enough.
Sinope's hand fell away, and she was quiet for a moment.
What do you want to tell me, child?
Solm turned to look at her, eyes narrowing. What do you mean?
I've been doing this since before you were born, said the woman. Believe me, I know when someone is holding something back. You're afraid of something, and it isn't just this revolution we find ourselves in.
Yes.
The words came of their own accord. I am afraid. I'm afraid that just by coming to your world, we will destroy all of this. She gestured around. A brief smile crossed Sinope's lips.
Oh, my dear, don't you realize? You have brought hope to Dagonet. That is a precious, precious thing. More fragile than faith, even.
No, I did nothing. I am only a messenger.
Solm wanted to tell her the truth in that moment, to explain the full scope of the Execution Force's plans, to reveal the real reasons behind their assistance to Capra's freedom fighters, to cry out her darkest, deepest fear that in her collusion with it all, she was no better than her bitter, callous brother. But the words would not come. All she heard in her thoughts was Aristide's challenge, the cold calculation he had laid before her. Were the lives of these people worth more than the death of the War Master, the living embodiment of the greatest threat to the human Imperium? Sinope came and sat with her, and slowly the old woman's expression turned darker.
Let me tell you what I am afraid of, she said, and you will understand why the struggle is so important. There are sinister forces at large in the universe, child.
The War Master.
The Horus Lupercal is only an agent of that unchecked anarchy, my dear. There are manifestations coming into being on every world that falls into the shadows cast by the War Master's ambition. Out in the blackness between the stars, cold hate grows.
Solm found the woman's quiet, intense voice compelling, and listened in silence, captured by her words. Sinope went on.
You and I, mankind itself, and even the God Emperor, all are being tested by a chorus of ruinous powers. If our Lord is truly divine, then we must know that he will have his opposite, something beyond our understanding of evil. What terrifies me is the dream of what will come if we let that hate overwhelm our glorious Imperium. There will be disorder and destruction, fire and chaos, said Jenica.
Had the choice been his, the killer would have preferred to wait until the Ayuba and its attendant ships had reached the Sol system before attempting this penetration. But Spear's windows of opportunity were limited and growing smaller with each passing hour. It was simply the most expedient option to do this now. Once they were within the boundaries of the Segmentum Solar, security around the Eurytas flotilla would increase tenfold, and operative Hissos would have much to occupy his time and attention. And then there was the other possibility to consider, that his target, once marked and stored, might be sufficiently powerful that Spear's ability could be released against it from across an interplanetary distance. He hoped that would not prove to be so. Spear relished the moment of great joy when he looked Akil in the eye and saw the understanding of the end upon it. To be denied that in his crowning moment, it would be simply unjust. The killer kept to the lines of tiles that glowed phosphor green through the gelatinous lenses the demon skin had grown over his eyes. Normal human vision would have noticed nothing to differentiate the tiles on the floor of the reliquary, and so a luckless entrant would wander into one of the zones of contragravity stitched into the chamber, there to float, trapped until the guards came with guns and ready trigger fingers. He ignored the works of art and objects of incredible value that arrayed the long gallery, each given pride of place in an alcove of its own. The remains of every Eurytas Void Baron since the first were held here, their ashes in urns as tall as a child, the containers made from spun diamond, tantalum, the shells of a sexet, quintal, and other materials, each rarer and more expensive than the last. Portraits of lords and ladies from the clan's history dominated every surface, and all of them stared out sightlessly at Spear as he threaded his way past, avoiding the perception spheres of beam sensors and magnetic anomaly detectors. The demon skin's fronds waved gently as he moved, continually tasting the ambient atmosphere and temperature to keep the intruder cooled in synchrony. The thermal monitors, studying every square centimetre of the reliquary walls, looked for the glow of body heat, but saw nothing. All the patient, clever machines continued to believe the chamber was still empty. At the far end of the gallery, inside a glass stasis cage on a plinth made of white marble and platinum, was the warrant of trade. Spear slowed as he approached it, licking his lips behind the bindings of his scab mask. The motion made the oily skin peel back over his cheeks, revealing teeth, a grin. The book was made of real paper, fabricated from one of the last natural forests on Venus. The ink had been refined from burst sac fluids harvested from Jovian skimmer rays. Artisans from Merica had assembled the tome, bound it in rich groxhide. Inlaid on the cover, flecks of gemstones from all the colonized worlds of the Sol system shimmered in the light of the gallery's electro-candles. This book was the physical manifestation of the Eurytas clan's right to travel the stars. More than their fleets of vessels, their armies of staff and crew,
more than the fiscal might they wielded over countless worlds and industrial holdings across the Tibian stars, more than any of those things. The warrant was what gave Merixun Eurytas and his kindred the Emperor's permission to trade, to voyage, to expand the Imperium's influence through sheer economic power. The killer almost laughed at that. As if any being could parcel out sections of the universe to his followers like plots of land or portions of food. What hubris! What monumental arrogance to assume that they had that entitlement! Such power could not be given. It could only be taken through bloodshed, pain, and the ruthless application of will. The glass case had a complex mechanism of suspensors and gravity splines within it, and, with the passage of a hand over a ruby sensor pad on the frame, the pages of the book inside could be turned without ever touching them. Spear flicked at the sensor, and the warrant creaked open, leaf after leaf of dense text flickering past. It fluttered to a halt on an ornately illuminated page lined in gilt, purple ink, and silver leaf. Words in High Gothic surrounded a sumptuously detailed picture, repeating the image depicted in the jade frieze in the audience chamber. The Emperor granting the first Eurytas his boon. But Spear's hungry gaze ignored the workmanship, turning instead towards a wet, liquid patch of dark crimson captured upon the featureless white vellum of the warrant's final page. A single drop of blood. He laid his hand on the edge of the case and let the demon skin around his fingertips deliquesce, oozing into the world holding the construction together. The heavy-duty armor glass creaked and split down the seam, the malleable flesh pressing on it, shifting it out of true. All at once, a pain gave off a snap of sound, and the killer muffled it with his oily palms. The glass fell out of the frame and into his hand. He greedily reached inside with trembling fingers. Spear would rip the page from the ancient book, tear it out of the stasis field that had preserved it for hundreds of years. He would hold the paper to his lips and consume the blood, take it like the kiss of a lover. He would... His hand reached for the pages of the warrant of trade and passed straight through it, as if the book were made of smoke. Inside the glass case, the tome seemed to flicker and grow indistinct, for one blinding moment becoming nothing but a perfect ghost image projected from a cluster of hololithic emitters concealed inside the frame of the cage. The case was empty. And for a moment so was Spear, his chest hollowed out by the sudden, horrible realization that his prize was not here. But then he was filled anew with murderous rage, and it took every last fraction of his self-control to stop the killer from screaming out his fury and destroying everything around him. After Lady Sinope had left her alone once more, Solm remained where she was on the ridge and waited for the darkness to engulf her. The night sky, a sight that so often gave her a moment of peace as she contemplated it, now seemed only to veil the threats the old woman had spoken of. She shivered involuntarily and felt a cold, familiar pressure at the edge of her senses. Iota. She turned and found the Culexus standing near the cave entrance watching her. The dusky-skinned girl's eyes glittered.
Spying on me? Yes, came the reply. You should not remain outside for too long. There are ships in orbit and satellite systems under the control of the clan forces. They will be sweeping this zone with their long-range images.
How long have you been watching?
I do not believe he is the forgiving kind, she repeated,
fingering the nullifier torque around her neck. Solm frowned.
You have no right to intrude on a private conversation.
If that was meant to inspire guilt in Iota, she gave no such reaction. The pariah seemed unable to grasp the niceties of such concepts as privacy, tact, or social graces.
What did the woman Sinope mean when she spoke about forces at large?
Iota shook her head. She did not refer to threats of a military nature.
It's complicated, said Solm.
To be honest, I'm not quite sure myself. But you value her words. And the words in the book.
Solm's blood ran cold.
What book?
The one in the chamber, on the lower levels, where the others gather with Sinope to talk about the Emperor as a god. You have been there.
You followed me?
Solm took a warning step forwards.
Yes. Later I returned when no one was there. I read some of the book.
Iota looked away, still toying with the talk.
I found it confusing.
Solm studied the Culexus, her mind racing. If Iota revealed the presence of the hidden chapel inside the rebel base, there was no way to predict what would happen. Many of Capra's resistance fighters followed the staunchly anti-theist imperial edict that labelled all churches as illegal. And she could not imagine what Aristide might do if he learned she had involvement with the Lectitio Divinitatis.
Kel will not be pleased, said the other woman, as if she could read her thoughts.
You won't speak of it, Solm insisted. You will not tell him.
Iota cocked her head.
He is blood kindred to you. The animus speculum reads the color of your auras. I saw the parity between them the first time I watched you through the eyes of my helm. And yet you keep that a secret, too.
Solm tried and failed to keep the shock from her face.
And what other secrets do you know, pariah?
She returned a level stare.
I know that you are now considering how you might ensure my silence by killing me. If you make the attempt, there is a chance you may succeed. But you are conflicted by the thought of such an action. It is something your brother would not hesitate to do in your place.
I am not Aristide, she insisted.
No, you are not.
Iota's face softened.
What is it like?
What?
Having kindred, siblings. I have no concept or experience of it. I was matured in an enclosed environment, a research facility. Your experience fascinates me. What is it like?
She repeated. Strangely, Solm felt a momentary pang of sadness for the Culexus.
Difficult, she replied at length. Iota, listen to me. Please say nothing to the others about the chapel.
If I do not, will you try to kill me?
Will you force me?
The Culexus shook her head.
No.
Where? Where was the warrant?
The question thundered through Spear's mind, and it would not let him go. He could not find rest, could not find a moment's peace until the document had been located. Everything about his master's careful, intricate plan hinged on the procurement of that one item. Without it, the assassination of the Emperor of Mankind was impossible. Spear was useless, a gun unloaded, a sword blade blunted. His existence had no meaning without the kill. Every single death he had performed, all of them, from the strangling of his birth parents to the ashing of the word-bearer who came to slit his throat. The fools on Iesta Veracrux, the Psy Witch, the investigators, and the man whose face he now wore, all of them were only steps on a road towards his ultimate goal. And now, Merikson Urytas had denied him that. The bloody rage Spear felt towards the Void Baron was so all-consuming that the killer feared merely laying eyes on the man would shatter his cover and send him into a berserker frenzy. Spear had all but the most trivial of Hissos's memories absorbed within him, and the operative had never known that the warrant of trade on display in the reliquary was a fake. There were fewer than a dozen men and women in the entire Urytas consortium who outranked the operative in matters of security. Spear wondered if one of them might know the true location of the tome. But how to be sure? He could kill his way through them and never be certain if they had that precious knowledge until he sucked it from their dying minds. But he could not risk such reckless behavior. Urytas himself would know. But murdering the Void Baron here and now, disposing of a body, passing through another assumption so soon after having torn Hissos's identity from his corpse, this was a course fraught with danger, far too risky to succeed. No,
He needed to find another way. And quickly.
Hissos!
The nobleman's voice was pitched high and sharp.
What are you doing here?
Spear looked up as Eurytas crossed the anteroom of the rogue trader's personal quarters where he stood waiting.
My lord,
he began, moderating his churning thoughts.
Forgive my intrusion, but I must speak with you.
Eurytas glanced over his shoulder as he tied a velvet belt around the day robes he was wearing. Through a half-open door, it was possible to glimpse a sleeping chamber beyond. A naked woman was lying in a doze back there on a snarl of bedsheets.
I am engaged, the Baron said with a grimace.
He seemed distracted.
Come to the audience chamber after we enter the warp and—
No, sir. Spear put a little steel into Hissos's voice.
This won't wait until we set off for Arrowhead. If I am correct, we may need to return to Aesta Veracrux.
That got his attention. Eurytas's eyes narrowed, but not enough to hide the flicker of fear in them.
Why would that be so? I have been retracing my steps, going over my notes and recollections from the Aestan murders.
He fixed the Baron with a level gaze and began to pay out the fiction he had created over the last few hours, a fiction he hoped would force the nobleman to give up the information he so desperately needed.
The two men, Yusuf Sabrat and Daeg Segan, the ones who did those terrible deeds, there was something they said that did not seem right to me at the end when I thought I would be killed by them.
Go on.
Eurytas went to a servitor and had it pour him a glass of water.
Sir, they spoke about a warrant.
The Baron stiffened slightly at the word. Spear smiled inwardly and went on.
At the time, I thought they meant warrants of arrest, but the thought occurs that they may have been talking about something else.
He nodded towards a painting on the wall, an impressionistic work showing the current Void Baron reading from the Warrant of Trade, as if it were some scholarly volume of esoteric knowledge.
Why would they be interested in the warrant?
Eurytas demanded.
I do not know. But these were no ordinary murderers, sir. We still cannot be certain by what exact means they terminated poor Perig, and the things they did at the sites of their kills in the name of their Theoch cult.
They were not part of the Theoch,
snapped the Baron, the retort coming out of nowhere. He shook his head and paced away a few steps.
I always knew,
said the nobleman, after a moment of silence.
I always knew that Erno Sig was innocent. That's why I sent you, Hissos, because I trusted you to find the truth.
Spear bowed, allowing his stolen face to grow saddened.
I hope I did not disappoint you, and you were correct, my lord. Sig was a dupe. Those murdering swine were not part of the Theoch,
Eurytas repeated, turning to advance on him once more. His face had lost some of its earlier color, and his gaze was turned inwards.
High Reeve Telemach seemed to think otherwise, Spear pressed. If I may ask, why do you disagree with her?
The killer saw something ephemeral pass over the other man's face, the shadow of a hidden truth. The understanding was coming up from Hissos's captured persona, from the operative's instinctive grasp of fragile human nature, his ability to perceive the falsehood in the words of a liar. Spear let it rise. Eurytas was going to incriminate himself, if he could only be encouraged to do so. The Void Baron had known more than he had revealed about this situation all along, and only now was it coming to light.
I will tell you what I believe, said the nobleman, moving to the door to close it. Those madmen on Aesta Veracrux were not just spree killers tormenting and bloodletting to satisfy their own insanity. I am certain now that they were agents of the War Master Horus Lupercal, may he rot. They were part of a plot that casts a shadow over the Tabian sector, perhaps over the whole galaxy.
He shuddered.
We have all heard the rumors about the things that happen on the worlds that have fallen.
Then his tone grew more intense.
Discrediting the Theoge and blackening the name of our clan is just one part of this conspiracy of evil.
Spear said nothing, dissembling the man's words in his thoughts.
It was clear now why Eurytas had been so quick to call the matter closed and depart from Aesta Veracrux as fast as decorum would allow. The involvement of Erno Sigg in the murders had been bad enough, but Eurytas had to be sure that sooner or later the clan's name would become connected to the incident in another, more damning way. He was afraid. On a swift and sudden impulse, Spear rocked off his feet from where he stood at attention and snatched at the Void Baron's robes, pulling the man off balance.
"What in Terra's name do you think you're doing?"
Eurytas cried out, affronted at the abrupt assault. But in the next second, his flash of anger died in his throat when Spear pulled up the voluminous sleeve of his robe to reveal a golden chain tight around his wrist, and on it the shape of an Aquila sigil. This time he couldn't resist letting a small smile creep out over Hissus's lips.
"You're one of them."
Eurytas shrugged him off and backed away, a guilty cast coming to his eyes.
"What are you talking about? Get out! You're dismissed!"
"I think not, sir."
Spear gave him a hard look.
"I think an explanation is in order."
For a moment, the man teetered on the verge of shouting him down, calling in his personal guard from the corridor outside. But Hissos's unerring sense for the hidden told Spear that Eurytas would not. The dead man's instincts were correct. The nobleman's shoulders slumped, and he planted himself in an ornamental chair, staring into the middle distance. Spear waited for the confession that he knew would come next. Men like the Void Baron lacked the will or the strength to really inhabit a lie. In the end, they welcomed the chance to unburden themselves.
"I am not."
He paused, trying to find the right words.
"The people who call themselves the Theoge came after, do you see? It was we who came first. We carried the message from Terra in safekeeping aboard our ships across the entire sector. Every son and daughter of the Eurytas family has been a participant in the Lectitio Divinitatis since the day of the boon. We carry the Emperor's divinity with us."
He said the words with rote precision, without any real energy or impetus behind them. Spear recalled what Daeg Segan had said just before he had torn him open.
"The Emperor protects."
Eurytas nodded solemnly, but it was abundantly clear that the light of true belief, the blind faith that Segan had shown in his dying moments, was in no way reflected in the Void Baron. If the nobleman was a believer in the cult of the God Emperor, then it was only as one who paid lip service to it, because it was expected of him. Spear's lip curled, his disgust for the man growing by the moment. He did not even have the courage of his convictions.
"It is our hidden duty," Eurytas went on. "We spread the word of his divinity in quiet and secrecy. Our clan has been allied to groups like the Theoge on dozens of worlds for centuries."
He looked away.
"But I never truly... that is, I did not..."
Spear watched and waited, saying nothing. As he expected, Eurytas was compelled to fill the silence.
"Horus is destroying everything. Every thread of power and influence we have, broken one at a time. And now he strikes, not only at our holdings, but at the network my forefathers built to carry the word of the Lectitio Divinitatis. A network of clandestine authority the Eurytas have used to control the Tibian sector for hundreds of years."
Spear shook Hissus's head. The human's arrogance was towering. He actually believed that a being as great as the War Master would lower himself to such parlor games as disrupting the ambitions of a single, petty, venal rogue trader. The reality was, the slow collapse of the Eurytas clan's fortunes was just a side effect of Horus's advance across the Ultima Segmentum. Still, it would serve Spear's interest to allow the man to think he was the focus of some interstellar conspiracy, when in fact he and all his blighted clan were little more than a means to an end.
"Ever since the conclusion of the Great Crusade, it has become harder and harder to hold on to things."
Eurytas sighed.
"Our fortunes are on the wane, my friend. I have tried to hide it, but it grows worse every day.
I thought perhaps when we returned to Terra, I could petition the Sigillite for an audience, and that where is the warrant of trade?
Spear was growing tired of the Void Baron, and he struck out with the question. Eurytas reacted as if he had been slapped.
In the reliquary, of course.
The lie was a poor one at best.
I am your senior security operative, sir, Spear retorted. Please credit me with some intelligence. Where is the real warrant? How did you know?
He shot to his feet, knocking the water glass to the floor where it shattered. A service mechanical skittered in across the carpet to clean up the breakage, but Eurytas paid it no heed.
Only three people.
He paused, composing himself.
When did you find out?
Spear studied him.
That is of no consequence.
After the abortive infiltration of the reliquary, the killer had been careful to ensure that no trace of his entry remained.
What matters is that you tell me where the real warrant is now. If you are correct about these agents in the employ of the Warmaster, then we must be certain it is secure.
They were looking for it, whispered Eurytas,
shocked by the thought. When the Baron looked up at him with cold fear in his eyes, Spear knew that he had the man in his grasp.
My sworn duty is to serve the Eurytas clan and their endeavors. That includes your network. But I cannot do that if the warrant becomes lost.
That must never happen.
The Void Baron swallowed hard.
It is not with the fleet. You have to understand, I had little choice. There were certain arrears that could not be paid, favors that were required in order to keep the clan operating.
Where?
Spear cracked Hissos's gruff voice like a whip. Eurytas looked away, abashed.
The warrant of trade was touched by the hand of the God Emperor of Mankind. And so in the eyes of those who embrace the word of the Lectitio Divinitatus, it is a holy object. In exchange for the nullification of a number of very large debts, I agreed to allow an assemblage of nobles involved with the Theoge to take possession of the warrant for an extended period of pilgrimage.
What nobles? Spear demanded.
Where?
They have not answered my communications. I fear they may be dead or in hiding. When Horus's forces find them, they will be wiped out, and the warrant will be destroyed.
His lip trembled.
If it has not already been.
Eurytas looked up.
The warrant is on the planet Dagonet.
Finally, the answer. For a long moment, Spear considered breaking out of Hissos' restrictive body and reverting back to his kill form, just to show Eurytas what sort of fool he was the instant before he ripped him to shreds. But instead, he let the rage ebb and gave a sullen nod.
I will need a ship, then. The fastest cutter available.
Oh, you cannot go to Dagonet,
Eurytas insisted.
The government there has already declared for the Warmaster. There is word that the Sons of Horus are on their way to the planet at this very moment. It's suicide. I won't allow it.
Spear twisted his proxy flesh into a sorrowful smile and gave a shallow bow.
I swear to you, I will recover the warrant, my lord. As of this moment, my life has no other purpose.
At length, the nobleman nodded.
Very well. And may the Emperor protect you.
We can but hope, he replied.